Oshkosh will host an A380. Avadyne introduces its new autopilot for Cirrus Aircraft. And Hawker Beechcraft confirms more layoffs are coming. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, April 16th, 2009. If you thought last year's Oshkosh arrival of the Boeing 747 Dreamlifter was huge, just wait. The Experimental Aircraft Association announced on Wednesday the Airbus A380 Super Jumbo will arrive and perform a flight demonstration to kick off the Tuesday, July 28th air show at AirVenture 2009. After towering over AeroShell Square the rest of the week, the enormous aircraft will open the air show again on Friday, July 31st with a flight demo before its departure. This will be the first public exhibition of the massive plane at a North American aviation event. EAA President and AirVenture Chairman Tom Poberesny observes, quote, "The A380 represents an amazing feat of aircraft design, engineering, and construction, and it will hold the distinction of being the largest passenger aircraft ever to have filled our sky and rolled onto our ramp," unquote. The A380's visit marks the second time this decade that Airbus has brought a major exhibit to Oshkosh. In 2003, the Airbus A300-600ST, a.k.a. the Beluga, made an appearance in honor of the 100th anniversary of the Wright brothers' first flight. Avadyne, which has lost considerable market share to Garmin of late, has fired a second salvo in its comeback battle. On the heels of its debut of the Integra Release 9 integrated flight deck, on Tuesday, Avadyne rolled out its new attitude-based DFC-100 digital flight control system, which is targeted specifically for installation in the Cirrus SR-20 and SR-22, equipped with Integra Release 9. The DFC-100 is an integrated flight computer and control panel designed as a plug-and-play replacement for existing rate-based S-Tech 55X flight computers. When added to the Integra Release 9-equipped Cirrus aircraft, there's no additional wiring, and therefore virtually no aircraft downtime for the upgrade. Of interest, the DFC-100 includes a dedicated straight and level button, similar to functionality introduced last year on the Garmin-based Cirrus perspective panel. The feature allows a disoriented pilot to override all autopilot modes, level the wings, and engage altitude hold, which could often be safer and less costly than firing the airframe parachute. Certification of Avadyne's DFC-100 for the Cirrus is expected next year. MSRP is about $15,000. Find more details on features in the corresponding text story at aero-news.net. New Hawker Beechcraft CEO William Boyster Jr. says more layoffs are coming at HBC. In a memo sent to workers on Tuesday and obtained by the Wichita Eagle, Boyster writes that further workforce reductions will be announced in coming weeks, affecting all pay grades. Quote, "As we begin the second quarter of 2009, we see further erosion of the economy, increasing uncertainty in the marketplace, and a continued decline in consumer demand for new aircraft, services, and support. Preserving our future, unfortunately, requires taking painful actions now," unquote. Before Boyster took over from Jim Schuster on March 23rd, Hawker Beech had gone through two previous rounds of layoffs since November, affecting nearly 2,800 of the company's 9,780 jobs in the U.S. So far, no hard numbers have been announced for the next round. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said on Tuesday he's been pleasantly surprised so far by the relatively muted response from lawmakers to his announcement of plans to cut the F-22 Raptor fighter and the VH-71 presidential helicopter. In comments to reporters noted in the Washington Post, Gates observed, quote, "It seems to me that a number of the responses have been thoughtful, and they've been willing to take this seriously and in the vein it was intended," unquote. Funding for programs being cut would be shifted to so-called non-conventional warfare programs, as seen in the current insurgent conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. That plan received the unexpected endorsement of U.S. Air Force Secretary Michael Donnelly and Air Force Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz in a Monday op-ed piece published in the Post. Worth noting, however, Congress is still on spring break. Things could get less muted next week. Up next on ANN, American Airlines does less badly than expected. Americans' pilots criticize executive bonuses. And Southwest announces details of service to Boston. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC 700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 16th. I'm Paul Platt. When is the $375 million quarterly loss considered good news? The answer is when you're American Airlines, which most analysts thought would lose $400 million or more. AMR's reported first quarter loss works out to $1.35 per share and is slightly worse than the $341 million lost in the same period in 2008. Bloomberg reports the market responded positively yesterday, briefly driving shares up to $5.14, their highest level since October of 2008. American also issued guidance predicting traffic numbers will rise this summer. In a bit of a surprise, the carrier also told 4,800 of its line employees it will delay planned layoffs next month in anticipation of that stronger passenger volume. Meanwhile, American's pilots union took the occasion of the first quarter report to question executive bonuses of over $6 million paid out this year. The statement from the Allied Pilots Association reads, in part, quote, "With this year's bonuses, American Airlines management has collected more than $300 million in stock-based bonuses during the past 4 years. Our pilots continue working under the concessionary contract that we agreed to under duress 6 years ago. That concessionary contract has since resulted in several billion dollars in givebacks. American Airlines would be better served if the executives redirected their energies toward repairing fractured relations with frontline employees rather than devising new schemes to further enrich themselves," unquote. Well, it's official. Southwest Airlines will soon touch down in Beantown. The Dallas-based low-cost carrier announced on Tuesday its upcoming flight schedule from Boston Logan International beginning on August 16th. The airline will begin service with 10 daily nonstops, 5 to Chicago Midway and 5 to Baltimore Washington International. Promotional fares are as low as $89 one way for Chicago and $49 one way for Baltimore Washington. Southwest's new service out of Boston Logan will offer direct or connecting service to 48 other destinations. Edward Frenney, director of aviation for the Massachusetts Port Authority, looks forward to the added competition. Quote, "Southwest's August landing leaves no doubt that Logan is the choice for both cost-conscious leisure and business travelers without compromising service. Chicago Midway and Baltimore Washington are two important markets for New Englanders," unquote. ANN has learned that author Jack Hunter has passed away at the age of 87. His World War I novel, The Blue Max, was published in 1964, became the basis for a motion picture of the same title starring George Peppard 2 years later, and continues to find an audience today. The story of a lower-class 18-year-old German who sets his sights on shooting down 20 enemy aircraft to earn his nation's highest decoration held echoes of its author's own personal conflicts. Hunter's website recalls he was stillborn, but refused to stay dead when doctors gave up on him. Never was an athlete, but lettered as his track team's manager. Was colorblind, but became an accomplished aviation artist. And abhorred violence, but enlisted in the Army after Pearl Harbor. Hunter eventually authored 17 published novels and discovered a love for blogging, which freed him from the constraints of editors and publishers. Responding to a 1998 invitation to talk about his most famous work, Hunter noted that the literary establishment frowns upon such explanatory efforts, holding that a work should stand on its own. He commented, quote, "Although I've toiled some 55 years in the publishing vineyard, I'm still not sure who or what constitutes the literati. The cynical mind suggests that the term is an invention of the book industry's Pharisees, calculated to intimidate authors who would stray from the Church of the Holy Prophet. Now that my long road is nearing an end, I feel no further need to prove myself, or to submit to anybody else's idea of how I should live what's left of my life. In my personal twilight, I do what I wish, providing it's legal and not too high in calories. I don't give a rat's empennage what the literati might have to say about it, unquote. The family says the funeral will be private. Still ahead, serendipity is noted in last weekend's King Air drama. Alaska says in-flight Wi-Fi is a keeper. And NASA picks a name for Node 3. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, April 16th. I'm Paul Plack. The Connecticut flight instructor who helped controllers in Florida successfully talk down an inexperienced single-engine-rated pilot in a King Air Sunday was downsized out of his last job as a corporate pilot. The Danbury News-Times report, Kerry Sorensen, got that long-distance call from controller and good friend Dan Favio, but quickly realized it was not just a happy Easter call. Favio said somberly, quote, "I have an emergency, and I need you," unquote. Favio became friends with Sorensen while working as a controller at Danbury for 2 years. He tells the paper, quote, "He's the most knowledgeable man about airplanes that I know. In order for us to get these people down safely, we were going to need specific information, like flap speed and approach speed, and Kerry can just rattle that stuff off," unquote. The Associated Press reports that passenger-turned pilot Doug White described the beginning of the emergency. He says the original pilot, Joe Kabuck, tilted his head back, made a guttural noise, and lost consciousness. The plane was on autopilot at the time, climbing through 10,000 feet out of Marco Island, Florida. White's company, White Equipment Leasing in Louisiana, owns the B-200. White had 150 hours in a single-engine Cessna, but no experience in his company's big twin turboprop. But he knew how to use the radio, and he knew enough to realize he needed help from someone familiar with a plane. Favio, who was on his lunch break at the tower when the emergency broke, happened to have Sorensen's phone number in a speed dial on his cell phone. But had that incident happened a day later, that call might not have been possible. Favio says that after he left work that day, his phone died in the middle of the next call, taking his personal list of numbers with it. Favio commented to the News Times, quote, "It wasn't just the battery, it died completely. I had to get a new one this morning, and I didn't have his number memorized," unquote. Alaska Airlines announced this week initial results of its in-flight Wi-Fi service trial, launched on February 26th. More than 2,100 passengers have used in-flight Wi-Fi, and 96% intend to use it again. Most respondents to the survey used the service for their laptop computers. About 35% used it for other portable devices, such as smartphones. Now comes the real test. The initial trial was free, but Alaska Airlines will begin evaluating pricing models for the service this week. Once that's settled, passengers will be able to purchase the service using any major credit card. Business interests near the new Berlin-Brandenburg International Airport in Germany are bringing a roadshow to the U.S. next week to highlight what they say is a great opportunity for U.S. investors. Stops will include Chicago, New York, and Boston. Construction is underway and completion expected in 2011. BBI will consolidate three airports into one modern facility, much to the chagrin of those who hated to see the closing of historic Tempelhof Airport last October. The new airport will be equipped to handle the Airbus A380 and will offer new conveniences and connections to passengers and businesses. The 2.2 billion euro airport is expected to handle up to 45 million passengers a year and is located near several major corporate headquarters. So if you're a U.S. investor, if any still exist, find out more about opportunities in the Berlin and Leipzig-Halle region before the show moves on to Asia. Visit www.gtai.de and click English in the upper right-hand corner for more details. And finally today, the new Node 3 on the International Space Station will not be named Colbert, despite the winning write-in campaign by fans of Comedy Central's late-night Colbert Report. While humoring the rants of host Stephen Colbert during the voting, NASA also reminded everyone that that vote was non-binding. Bill Gerstenmaier, NASA's Associate Administrator for Space Operations, also reminded the Associated Press, quote, "We don't typically name U.S. space station hardware after living people, and this is no exception," unquote. In a bit of a surprise, NASA also isn't picking the name Serenity, despite the fact that it got the most votes of any of the names suggested by the agency. Colbert had mocked that name, which is also a brand of adult diaper. The node will instead be called Tranquility, after the moon's Sea of Tranquility, which was the landing spot for Apollo 11. NASA had hinted that it might honor Colbert's impressive vote tally by naming something aboard the station in his honor, and speculation had immediately centered on the node's commode. Instead, NASA says it will name its new astronaut treadmill Colbert, invite the host to Houston to try it out, and then to Florida to see its launch. Of note, the name will be much more impressive than simply Treadmill Colbert. Nothing NASA sends into space has a name that simple. Nope, the device will be known as the Combined Operational Load-Bearing External Resistance Treadmill Colbert. Much better. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. After months of bad economic news, and the day after the U.S. federal income tax filing deadline, I thought you might appreciate hearing a little optimism for a change. Today, we'll hear from Air Taxi Association President Joe Leader as he looks forward to the rest of 2009. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.